So we finished one complete section. And that's the abode of Krishna, Goloka Vrindavan, including Vraja and Svetadvipa, and the different residences of the personalities who have that as their dham. This transition verse, is there, what do you do?
I think it's been taken.
Into the next section. The next section is going to be not Govinda, but Mahavishnu, his expansion, or the expansion of his expansion, bringing about the material creation. So in our chart, it's at the bottom, or closer to the bottom, on the other side of the causal ocean. The material creation, because Mahavishnu is residing in the causal ocean. So we've been hearing about Goloka and down to the causal ocean. On this side of the causal ocean is the material creation. Something doesn't seem right. We've got an extra slide, but that's all right. Okay. So let's chant this verse together. Evam jyotirmayo deva sad ananda harat paraha atmaramasya tasyasti prakatyana samagamaha. Translation. The Lord of Gokula is the transcendental supreme Godhead, the own self of eternal ecstasies. He is the superior of all superiors and is busily engaged in the enjoyments of the transcendental realm and has no association with his mundane potency. So, for some reason there's an extra slide here. We'll just go to the next verse where... So there's two parts to this, short, the spiritual energy and the material energy. Let me go back. We've been speaking about the Lord of Goloka and his dham. Jiva Goswami says this verse is spoken to make it very clear the Lord, who is the predominator of his dham and his dham are non-different, and distinct from him is all the other realms, including Devi dham. And the abode of Mahavishnu is not the same as the abode of Goloka dham. So, in the spiritual realm, in Goloka dham, the internal potency is alone at work. There's no external energy. And this internal potency has these three divisions. Where's the Mataji who is asking this question? Sandini, Sambit, and Radini, or Satchitananda. Same as the first verse. Satchitananda, corresponding identically, one-to-one correspondence with Sandini, Sambit, and Radini. And there's living entities in this realm, Devi Dham, Jiva souls that are marginal potency, another category, and they can experience the spiritual realm, even enter into the spiritual realm, even while located in this realm, what to speak of after the body is finished, enter into the spiritual realm. By the combination of these two, according to the acharyas that are describing these things, particularly Jiva Goswami. So the living entity, when in contact with devotional service, Ladini potency is the agency of that devotional service, and the sandhit, or the knowledge-giving potency, Krishna may disclose his identity to such a person. And I'll just share something with you. While we were in Vrindavan, one of the places we went to was Akshayvat, which is a Dinabandhu special place. Most people don't know about Akshayvat, but Dinabandhu knows all kinds of places that people don't know. So a number of the devotees went by car, and then there were a number of buses, and the cars get there quicker than buses. So we were seated underneath this, vat means banyan tree, and akshay means unlimited. So it's on the Gokul side, or the eastern side of the Jamuna. And at the time of Krishna's pastimes, this akshayvat was so akshay, so big, that it extended all the way to the river Jamuna, and on the other side of the river Jamuna, it was one of the ways that the cowherd boys would go from one side of the Jamuna to the other side of the Jamuna for their pastimes. And they go to Akshayvat and just climb the banyan tree and perform their pastimes. Dinabandhu didn't describe how the cows got to the other side. They couldn't climb trees. So we didn't know all this. It was the first time I had been there also. We're just seated under this nice banyan tree that kind of Kali Yuga made it shrink a little bit. But still, a huge, huge banyan tree. And we were just having kirtan, waiting for the buses to come. So one devotee, who also had never been there, was in a very happy, Krishna-conscious mood, taking this as an opportunity to chant. They were intending to stay on for the japa retreat that Bhurijan is conducting, so they were like warming up for the japa retreat while waiting at Akshayvat. And they were over by where there's a go shop. And as they were chanting several rounds, because it takes a while for the buses to come, they had this meeting of the Sandhit potency and Ladini potency, meaning they had this sense or premonition of Krishna and the cowherd boys. Krishna, Balaram, and the cowherd boys were in the area. And they were looking around to see where they would see Krishna and Balaram, the cowherd boys. And they described, it's hard to say how to describe this, Maharaj, but like a vision. I don't know how else to say it. Hare Krishna. Like a vision. And curtain was drawn back, and the presence of Krishna and Balaram, the cowherd boys, and the cows, was something they at least felt. Although they didn't even know where they were. And then the curtain closed. That sense of the presence of Krishna's pastimes just closed. But the curtain opened briefly. And needless to say, they felt very happy. And then when they heard what the place was, it was, wow. The pastimes of Krishna are eternal. They're eternally going on in Vrindavan. And if these two parts of the internal potency extended by Krishna to the jiva, the tatastha shakti, can experience Krishna, that's the spiritual realm. And then there's the material realm. And the material realm is made up of a transformation of the internal potency. How does that work? Here's a few references. One of them you're probably quite familiar with. At the time of Krishna's appearance, we hear about this nearly every Janmashtami. When the first, after the first six children, boys of Devaki were killed by Kamsa, there was a seventh pregnancy, which was Balaram, in the womb of Devaki. Krishna then called Yogamaya, who was very happy. Yes, yes, service, service. Here's some service for you. Within the womb of Devaki is my brother, Balaram. Please transfer Balaram from the womb of Devaki to the womb of Rohini. And don't worry, he's very heavy, but I'll give you the strength, the capacity to do that. And then, the next service, then you appear in the womb of Yashoda and take birth as her child. While I will appear as the eighth child of Devaki and on the same evening will take birth. I as the son of Devaki, you as the son of Yashoda. And then the next service is, Vasudeva is going to carry, he knew like the script before it happened, Vasudeva is going to carry me from Mathura to Gokul, place me by the side of Yashoda, who won't even recognize because she'll be asleep, and take you into the prison house of Kamsa. And he'll try to kill you, but he won't be able to because you're my Shakti. And then you'll appear all throughout the land by various names like Durga and etc., etc., according to the locations. Now note, he's speaking to Yogamaya, who later is going to be known not as Yogamaya, but as Mahamaya. One Shakti, known differently by different persons according to their regard for, ultimately for Krishna, but also for her. Like one is a source of enjoyment, and the other is a source of devotional service. One energy, Prabhupada gives this example, electricity can be used by an electrician to make something hot or make something cold because he's an electrician, he knows. But Krishna also knows. He's like the master electrician. And he can use his internal potency one way and differently for those who are not devotees in a different way. One energy. Clear? So we just have been speaking for some hours about the internal potency, and now we're going to speak about the external potency. The verse says, and the next verse is going to say it again, he has no association with his mundane potency. He, Krishna, Govinda, has nothing to do with his mundane potency. But there is a mundane potency. Here's a description from Chaitanya Charitamrita. Lord Chaitanya's discussion with Sanatan Goswami, chapter 20, Madhya Lila. The Viraja, or causal ocean, is the border between the spiritual and material worlds. The material energy is situated on one shore of that ocean, and it cannot enter onto the other shore, which is the spiritual sky. So in our chart, below Vaikuntha, there you see that cloud area, and just below the cloud area, that's the Mahatattva, by the way, or Pradhan, and then there's the causal ocean. So on one side is the spiritual sky, on the other side is the material energy, or the material sky. So spiritual energy, material energy, separated by the causal ocean. And Mahavishnu reclines on that causal ocean. So we're hearing in text 6, there's Govinda in the spiritual world that's enjoying with his various energies and his devotees and everything. Has nothing to do with this mundane energy. But then there's this other energy, the mundane energy. So, thinking of that reference from Krishna's appearance, discussing with Yogamaya, Here's another scriptural reference. In this case, it's from Navadvip Dham Mahatmya, Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote, where Lord Shiva is engaged in chanting in an ecstatic way, loudly, the name of Gauranga and Gauranga and Gauranga, and he's dancing and dancing like a madman. And Parvati's going, wow. What's this Gauranga? Please tell me, my Lord. And he then describes to her, the personality of Godhead soon will appear in Navadvip in a golden form, who will be called Gaura Anga. Anga means limbs, and golden limbs. Gaura Anga. And he'll deliver Krishna Prema to all who come in contact with him by chanting loudly the holy name of the Lord. Well, Parvati says, I'd like to see that form of the Lord. May I have your permission to go to Navadvip and perform austerities, and maybe I'll be able to see that form of the Lord. So he gives permission, she comes, and she engages in austerities, calling Gauranga as Lord Shiva was doing, and he appears. And she's very happy to see this beautiful form of Gauranga, but then prays, as the mundane potency had been delegated to this thankless task of deluding the conditioned souls and keeping them bound within the material realm. And as such, I'm ashamed to come before you. In her prayers, she says, people say that wherever there is Krishna, there's no Maya. So I'm forced to remain always outside of your spiritual realm. She's on this side of the river Viraja. How will I ever see your pastimes? I'm away from you, in service to you, but away from you. So Gauranga says to Parvati, listen carefully. I'll read it twice because it's subtle. Listen carefully to my words, O Supreme Goddess. You are my energy. You are not separate or different from me. My one associated energy has two forms. Within the spiritual kingdom, the original energy has one form as Sri Radhika. But for carrying out activities in the material world, she has expanded herself as you. Without you, my lila would not be accomplished. For in the form of Yogamaya, you are necessary for my pastimes. In Vraja, you are eternally present as Purnamasi. And in Navadvip, you are present as Prodamaya, along with Shiva Kshetrapal, guardian of the Dham. Got it? I'll read it again. It's similar to what Krishna is speaking to Yogamaya, but instead of being in Braja, it's in Navadvip. Same thing. I'll say it rather than read it. You are my internal potency. You are none different than me. You're necessary for my pastimes in Braja. But also one of my pastimes is creation. And for the purpose of creation, I require you. You assist me in that pastime. And in your station in Navadvip, you are present as Prodamaya. Prodamaya is the same thing that Purnamasi is in Braja. You assist me, Lord Chaitanya, in my pastimes, as Purnamasi assists Krishna in his pastimes. And you are present in Navadvip along with Kshetrapal Shiva, like you were asking about the deity behind the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Kshetrapal, the protector of the Dham, like Gopal, the protector of cows. Kshetrapal Shiva, He protects the dham, people unqualified. He keeps them out. And people qualified, he gives them entrance. And Prodamaya, similarly. Those are unqualified, she keeps them out. Naham prakasha sarvasya yogamaya samavrata. Have you ever wondered about that verse in Bhagavad Gita? Why does Krishna use the word yogamaya? Have you ever wondered about that? I used to wonder about it all the time. Because normally, in ISKCON, we're used to hearing and thinking of yogamaya as that energy of Krishna that assists in his pastimes. That kind of yogamaya. But here's the same term, yogamaya, saying, or Krishna is saying, by my yogamaya potency, na aham prakash. People can't see me. I'm not manifest by the agency of my yogamaya potency. That's yogamaya transformed as mahamaya. But he doesn't bother to say yogamaya transformed as mahamaya. He just says, by my yogamaya potency. But it's the same as the pastime of Krishna's appearance. After Kamsa tries to kill his Shakti, Krishna's Shakti, that's not going to happen. Then you'll appear in different places as Parvati and Durga and etc., etc., etc. So in Navadvip, she is Prodamaya. Those who go to Navadvip Prakrama, sometimes we visit the Prodamaya temple. And that's the internal potency. It's the counterpart in Vrindavan is Purnamasi. As we go into Vrindavan and you go to the form of Lord Shiva, who is guardian of the Rasa dance. Right? And in that same vicinity is a deity of the internal potency. She also gives entrance into that spiritual realm, the realm of Krishna's rasa dance. So here, Parvati is doing one thing. She's keeping living entities who are averse to Krishna very busy. So busy, when we invite them to temple, they say, I'm sorry, I'm too busy, I don't have time. I have so many fruitive activities to do. I don't have any time to come to the temple. Maybe I'll come on Janmashtami. Because they're very, very busily engaged in material activities. And that's, so Parvati's lamenting. But she has other functions because she's Krishna's energy. Or Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's energy. So we're about to, that's it for this verse, we're about to now enter into the discussion of creation. And if you thought the topic of yantras was a little complex, that was just warm-up. Because this is Krishna's energies working in different ways. But don't worry, here's a statement from Srimad Bhagavatam, 8th canto, spoken by Lord Shiva, who says, O my Lord, I, who am considered to be the best of the demigods, and Lord Brahma, and the great rishis, headed by Marichi, are born in the mode of goodness. Anybody here was born in the mode of goodness? Nonetheless, we are bewildered by your illusory energy and cannot understand what this creation is. Aside from us, what is to be said of others, like demons and human beings, who are in the base modes of material nature, Rajagun and Tamagun, how will they know you? Well, by descending mercy, a little bit possible. So the sound vibration of Sri Brahma Samhita and the explanation of our great acharyas, like Jiva Goswami and those following his line, will help us to understand. And this is part of the samvit potency that we just like take a samvit potency bath and become purified and elevated. Again, it's not an intellectual gymnastic thing. It's not your acumen in intellectual matters that's going to do it. Not going to do it. It's sound vibration heard attentively with the effort to try to understand it, but not in an intellectual way, in a descending knowledge way. Okay, so here we go into text 7 of Sri Brahma Samhita, the process of creation. Mayaya Ramamanasya Navi Yogas Tayasaha Atmana Ramaya Vene Chakta Kalam Shishrikshaya. Translation. Krishna never consorts with his illusory energy. Still, her connection is not entirely cut off from the absolute truth. When he intends to create the material world, the amorous pastime in which he engages by consorting with his own spiritual chit potency, Rama, by casting his glance at the deluding energy in the shape of sending his time energy, is an auxiliary activity. Auxiliary, like secondary. His primary is enjoying pastimes with his internal potency. Now, this verse specifically is referring to Mahavishnu. And the consort of Mahavishnu is Rama. This says Lakshmi is the consort of Narayana, and Sita is the consort of Ram, and Radha is the consort of Krishna. Similarly, Rama, we'll hear her name a number of times, so put it in its place. Rama is the internal potency of Mahavishnu. Now, just looking ahead a little bit, she is known by other names, but it's the same person. So think about this for a moment. When you see illustrations, paintings, or pictures of Mahavishnu, not Parvadakshai Vishnu, because we see Lakshmi at his feet, massaging his feet. Mahavishnu, reclining on the causal ocean, on the bed of Anantashesh. Do you see Rama? No. Why not? Because she's within. And he's enjoying pastimes with her within. And so another name for her is Yoga Nidra. Nidra means sleep. But it's not like when we, what we do, you know, we turn the light off and lie down and zone out. That's what we do. But his is Yoga Nidra. It's mystic slumber where he, it's specifically said, his eyes are not closed, but he's enjoying pastimes with Rama within. In that mystic slumber. But she's his internal potency, his chit potency, his spiritual potency, same as Sita and Lakshmi and Radha are. And the verse is saying that when he intends to create the material world, that is, he has intention, or sankalpa, or a thought, a desire, icha in Sanskrit, a desire. But he didn't have to do anything. All he does is desire. And his internal potency, Rama, because she is his internal potency, she knows everything about him. I mean, wives know all kinds of things about their husbands that nobody else knows, because they're their wives. And they're intimately associated with their husbands. This is the internal potency, and she knows everything about everything. Not even like wives know about their husbands. She is his internal potency. So she knows he has this desire. And I'm going to read to you what Srimad Bhagavatam says about this desire. And this is, listen carefully, especially in terms of whenever you're asked this question, at least once a month or more, depending on how often you speak and discuss with people. What's the purpose of creation? You ever hear that one before? It's asked in different ways. Like, you know, God is all good, and he's all powerful, so why does he make a place where people suffer? That's another way of asking the same thing. You've heard that one? You know, why do good things, bad things happen to good people? That's another one. It's, you know, what's the purpose? When somebody is suffering, why? Either you're asking the question or someone is asking you the question, why? Why the creation? I was at the Rath Yatra in Chicago, and I met a congregation member who's Chinese woman, married to an Indian man. Interesting combination. And she has just a natural attraction. I mean, in the course of knowing her, I said, it's very clear. You were a devotee in your previous life, and somehow you took your birth in China. But, you know, the purpose of this birth for you is to continue in your devotional service. Just completely a natural devotee. So the first met, just like Rath Yatra, please meet so-and-so. He said, may I ask a question? Why is there creation? Like, first question. Okay. Here's a live one. Why is there creation? Here's the answer. Listen carefully. It will serve you well when people ask this question in its different forms. This is from Canto 3, Chapter 5, text number 24. Look it up later if you want. 3524. The Lord, the undisputed proprietor of everything, same one we've been speaking about, was the only seer. In this case, it's Mahavishnu. The cosmic manifestation was not present at that time. And thus, he, Mahavishnu, felt imperfect without his plenary and separated parts and parcels. The material energy was dormant, whereas the internal potency was manifested. Purport. Well, I'm not going to read it. I'll just say, out of compassion. So living in, during the unmanifest state of creation, the material energy is in a dormant, pradhan state, outside of him, apart from him. He is enjoying with Rama Devi, but there's a reflection of his internal potency, sometimes known as Chaya Devi, the shadow of his internal potency. So the shadow exists because of the object. She is the expansion of Rama Devi. And the living entities, that's matter, is over there, pradhan state, undifferentiated everything. And the living entities are within him, in a state of susupti. What does susupti mean? Susupti means there are three stages of consciousness. Prabhupada says it very simply. Awake, that's like what we're doing right now. Then asleep, that's what we do at night. And then susupti, that's what we do when we're under anesthesia. Or we're within the body of Mahavishnu. Same, the susupti. Spin out a little bit. Susupti is where time, you don't even feel it. Not only you don't feel like, you know, the surgeon cutting your body when you're under anesthesia, you don't feel the passage of time. Has anybody here had an operation where they've been under anesthesia and when you come out, or just even a procedure, medical procedure, and you come out of anesthesia and it's like time hasn't passed at all? Anyone's had that experience? I could elaborate with examples, but that's the state. The living entities are under susupti state within the body of Mahavishnu, and he's considering two things. Those living entities in the susupti state, they're not experiencing transcendental happiness. They're not experiencing anything. They're in susupti state. And out of compassion for them, emphasis on compassion for them, wishing that they have another chance to again come to that state of happiness. And seeing at a distance this Chaya Devi, the reflection of Rama Devi, knowing that she wants something to do. She wants some service. But she's in this dormant state, this pradhan state, inactive state. So he feels compassion for her. He wishes for her to have some service to do. That's it. That's the verse in purport. He has a desire, icha. So then, Rama, being his internal potency, knows that he has that desire, that will. She has all kinds of potencies in her care or charge, sub-potencies of the internal potency, and she transforms her potency and engages them in the, along with the glance of Mahavishnu. She, her Icha Shakti, her desire, willing potency, along with her time energy. Now, time is a fascinating subject. Time in the spiritual world is eternal. Remember that with this little boy? There's no beginning and end to infinity. It's eternal time. She and Mahavishnu are functioning in the spiritual potency where time is eternal. But she has sub-potencies that she can transform into the other kind of time. And so she does, because of the Lord's will. So the other kind of time and the living entities are entrusted to the glance of Mahavishnu, and time and the living entities are transferred into the pradhan, this Chaya Devi. So here you see a picture. You're not unfamiliar with this picture. This is Mahavishnu. Rama Devi is not shown because she's inside, but she's there with him, and he's enjoying his spiritual potency. But he has this desire too. Compassion upon the living entities that are within his body and are not enjoying transcendental happiness, and desire that Chaya Devi or Maya or Pradhan, his external energy, has something to do. And he's lying on the causal ocean. And so his glance, Rama Devi entrusts the living entities and the time energy, her time energy, into the glance of Mahavishnu. You see. Then at the end of the purport of this text number 7, you'll find something very interesting. And that is, yeah. Let's go to our book. You have text number 7, the very last part of the purport. Text number 7. The deluding energy, that's what's pictured as Durga, the deluding energy as the maidservant of the spiritual chit potency, Rama, serves the manifested plenary portion of Godhead consorted with Rama, so she's serving him. Time energy, representing the force of activity and instrumentality of Rama, hence there is found the process of masculinity or the creative force. What was that all about? There's two parts. You watch the slide. What's going to show is the living entities are still there, but this Kala Shakti has two parts. Actually has many parts, but two prominent parts. And that is, in the language of this purport, force of activity, that's Kriya Shakti. And instrumentality is the desire of the Lord, Icha Shakti. But it's It's her, she sees his desire, she has her own Ichha Shakti, and she sends her Ichha Shakti and the force of activity as the time energy. It's a little scientific, but yeah, hey, many of you are Microsoft workers, so you're used to things that are technical. If you weren't Microsoft workers, you'd probably be on the job somewhere today, because many people are working today and you're here. So, we'll do it again. We'll go back. The glance, commonly we hear, the glance of Mahavishnu carries these two things, time and the living entities. And time and living entities contacting the material energy agitates the material energy and it starts to separate out into different elements. Pradhan becomes Mahatattva. You with me? So all we're doing here is, Bhaktisiddhanta is doing, is saying this time energy, Kala Shakti, has two subparts. Force of activity, Kriya Shakti. Kriya means activity. Kriya Shakti. And the other is instrumentality is his word, which is Ichha Shakti. And sometimes we'll hear that Ichha Shakti described as Bala Shakti. Bala, spiritual strength. Instrumentality, gets things done. So that's the glance. That's what this verse is saying. I'm going to add some points. It doesn't modify anything, it just helps reinforce all of the little bit that I've said. From Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila chapter 5, there's three texts where Krishna Das Kaviraj is saying the same thing. A part of a part of a whole is called Kala. So, Sri Balaram is the counter form of Lord Govinda. So that's a direct expansion called Svangsa. Krishna expands as Balaram. His counter form, or counterpart, he's none different than Krishna, Svangsa. Balaram's own expansion is called Mahasankarshan. We did it, right? Up here, the Shretadvipa. Krishna expands as Vasudev, Balaram expands as Sankarshan. And his fragment, the Purusha, so it's a little, there's another step, that Sankarshan of Goloka expands as Mahasankarshan in Vaikuntha, who expands as the Purusha avatars. Mahavishnu. So it's therefore the Kala, a portion of a plenary portion. I say that this Kala is Mahavishnu. He is Mahapurusha and is the source of the other Purushas and who is all-pervading. So Mahavishnu expands as Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, expands as Shiradakshaya Vishnu. The Lord of the universe, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, expands within every atom and within the heart of every living entity. Now, please note, this is an ontological description. It's not a chronological description. In other words, it's not that once upon a time Mahavishnu didn't exist and Balaram looked at his watch and said, gee, you think it's time for Mahavishnu to exist? And boom, he exists. And Mahavishnu looked at his watch and said, I think it's time for Garbhadakshaya Vishnu to exist. And then, so it's not a chronological event. It's a ontological description, or as Nila Munji was asking yesterday, what does ontological mean? It's a study of being, of what is. And there's a relationship between them, and it's a eternal ontological relationship. Balaram expands. But it's not a conflict. We think of these things in terms of time. Don't make that mistake. It's not in terms of time. It's a relationship of one entity and another entity. Okay? Now, because of time, we're in this kind of time, I'm not going to go into a long description. It's a beautiful description. You can read it on your own. Chapter 90. Chapter 90 of Canto 10, or Krishna book, where Krishna and Arjun go to the abode of Mahavishnu. Detailed description of the abode of Mahavishnu. Normally, we see Mahavishnu looks like this, where he's lying in the causal ocean. But he's, as it says, he's all-pervading. He has his own abode, Mahavishnu Loka. And Arjuna and Krishna go there. And what they see is not this. They see palaces and gardens and opulence. And I'm just going to read one little section. The Lord was surrounded. This is Arjuna and Krishna seeing. The Lord was surrounded, Mahavishnu, was surrounded by his personal associates, Nanda and Sunanda, and the personified Sudarshan Disk was also standing by him. As stated in the Vedas, the Lord has innumerable energies, and they were also standing there, personified. The most important among them was as follows. There's four. Pushti, the energy of nourishment. Shri, the energy of beauty. Kirti, the energy of reputation. And Aja, the energy of material creation. Mahavishnu deploys Aja when it comes to creation. All these energies are invested in the administrators of the material world, namely Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Lord Vishnu, and in the kings of the heavenly planets, Indra, Chandra, Varuna, and the sun god. In other words, all these demigods being empowered by the Lord with certain energies, his energies, engaged in transcendental loving service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Mahavishnu feature is an expansion of Krishna's body. It is also confirmed in the Brahma Samhita that Mahavishnu is a portion of a plenary expansion of Krishna. So, I read that part specifically because it's mentioned of the energies. If you remember, Krishna has, he's in the center. I'm repeating myself for a purpose. Krishna is the source of everything. So he is the source and the origin of all energies. When he expands as Vasudeva, there's all kinds of energies there. When he expands, there's Mahavishnu, and he has his energies. But they're all expansions of Krishna's energies for the service of Krishna. In this case, to serve the purpose of creation. Now here's two other references. Those of you that are familiar with Srimad Bhagavatam, think for a moment of Canto 1, Chapter 3, where the incarnations of the Lord are presented. The very first verse speaks of the Purusha avatars, and here's the translation. Sutta Goswami said, in the beginning of the creation, the Lord first expanded himself in the universal form of the Purusha incarnation and manifested all the ingredients for the material creation, which is the subject matter we're discussing, but with more detail. And thus, at first, there was the creation of the 16 principles of material action. This was for the purpose of creating the material universe. So we've heard of three, whoops, so far two, Kriya Shakti, Icha Shakti. But there's 16. These are two principal ones. And there's another one that's going to be mentioned. And that's... you'll see it in just a moment. But in Parasha Shaktir Vivadaiva Shruyate Swabhaviki Gyana Bala Kriyacha. Familiar with that verse? Prabhupada quotes it many times. Krishna works through his very... He has unlimited potencies, and he works through those potencies, especially these three. Two of them are here. Kriya Shakti and Icha Shakti, or Bala Shakti, and the third is Jnana Shakti, for the purpose of creation. But there's 16, and there's three principal ones. This same verse 131, Bhagavatam, is addressed in Chaitanya Charitamrita. And Prabhupada lists the 16 that were manifest at the beginning of creation. And I'll just read them. You don't have to memorize them. Sri, Bhu, Nila, Kanti, Kirti, Tushti, Ghee, Pushti, Satya, Gyana, 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 Jaya, Utkarshini, Vimala. Remember her? She's also in Svetadvipa, but she's also with Mahavishnu. Yogamaya, Pravi, and two more. Ishana and Anugraha. I'm not going to read them, but Lagu Bhagavatamrita gives a similar list. Bhagavat Sandarbha gives a similar list. Skanda Purana, I'll just read that one, very short. At that place, 16,000 gopis were assembled with Krishna, who is considered the supreme, the super soul, at least his expansion, the shelter of all living beings. These gopis are his renowned 16 potencies. Hey, the gopis are the 16 potencies, or their expansions are the 16 potencies needed for creation. Because what do they want? They want whatever the Lord wants. And if it's helping with the affairs of material creation, yay, we'll expand ourselves and provide this arrangement. So listen to this. This is continued from Skanda Purana. Krishna is like the moon. The gopis are like its phases. And the full contingent of gopis, that's 16,000 of them, is like the full sequence of the moon's 16 phases. Each of these 16 divisions of gopis, my dear Varangana, is subdivided into 1,000 parts. So, the gopis expand themselves to provide the arrangements for creation. Krishna doesn't have to do anything. All he does is, he just feels compassionate. That's all he has to do. And when he feels something, his energies take care of that something, whatever that something is. And some of the... this is in relation to the living entities that within his body. There's living entities in each of these other realms, and he's reciprocating with them according to their regard or their love for him. Doesn't Krishna say that in Bhagavad Gita? Yayatam mam prapadyante tangstadaiva bhajam yaham. Bhajam yaham. As they worship him or have regard for him, he reciprocates. That's who we're worshiping. And we'd like to extend ourselves with unmixed love for him and get that reciprocation. We want to get there. We're not there. We're mixed. We would like to get unmixed. So we do our sadhana and hear instructions from elevated souls and try to follow them. So in this picture, there is Kala Shakti has these two divisions, and a question in my involvement in this subject matter is, Where does Jnana Shakti come in? Jnana Bala Kriya. So, there's a commentary on this little section from Raghava Goswami who says as follows. Kriya Shakti, or the creative energy, is manifest in the act of creation of Mahavishnu. Goddess Durga is Ichha Shakti, the willpower, because Rama entrusts her Ichha Shakti to the glance of Mahavishnu and then to the living entities. Jnana Shakti, or the Lord's power of knowledge, is manifest when, by glancing at the material universes, the Lord creates, maintains, and destroys them. Because how can you have anything without proper understanding of that something? So it needed. Jnana Shakti is needed, and the Lord glancing carries. So it's not mentioned by Bhakti Siddhanta in his purport, but it's also there. But essentially are these two. Ichha Shakti and Kriya Shakti. This is from the lower part of our diagram, and this image is going to focus same on, here's Mahavishnu, you see these rays coming out, that's his glance, that's Rama Devi, or Lakshmi. Shambhu is the glance, and Durga is the receiver of the glance. Okay. So we're almost done. Or at least for this session. So let's chant together. Niyati sa rama devi tat priya tat vasham tada tavlingam bhagavan shambhur jyoti rupa sanatanah yayani sapara shakti kamo bijam mahatare. Translation. The secondary process of association with Maya is described. Remember, it was called an auxiliary, or secondary process. Here's the description. Rama Devi, the spiritual, or chit potency, beloved consort of the Supreme Lord, is the regulatrix of all entities. There's Bhakti Siddhanta's language again. She's in charge in the spiritual world and her expansion in the material world. The living entities that are struggling in the material world, she's in charge, Durga. And in the spiritual world, Radharani. And in the Vaikuntha realm, Lakshmi. She's engaging them in whatever their activities are. The divine plenary portion of Krishna creates the mundane world, Mahavishnu. At creation, there appears a divine halo of the nature of his own subjective portion, svansa. Whenever you hear, he uses subjective portion a lot. It means svansa. It's like Balarama to Krishna, the svansa. A direct expansion, one candle lighting another candle, like that. Svansa, subjective portion. This halo is divine Shambhu, the masculine symbol or manifested emblem of the Supreme Lord. This halo is the dim twilight reflection of the supreme eternal effulgence. This masculine symbol is the subjective portion, remember that word, svansa, the direct expansion, of divinity, Mahavishnu, who functions as progenitor of the mundane world subject to the supreme regulatrix. There's that regulatrix language again. The spiritual potency, in this case, just like the very first word in the verse, niyati. Niyati. She regulates the living entities in this world, niyati. the conceiving potency in regard to mundane creation makes her appearance out of the supreme regulatrix. That is, Maya is an expansion of her. Remember the description. Durga expands from Yogamaya. Yes? You're with me? Okay. She is Maya, the limited, non-absolute, apara potency. The symbol of mundane feminine productivity. The intercourse of these two brings forth the faculty of perverted cognition called false ego. So when the living entities and the time energy contact pradhan, pradhan is totality of undifferentiated material energy, like a big cloud, and like a big warehouse that's all jumbled up. Everything's all mixed up. The first thing that happens is the energy of the living entities and the time energy agitates pradhan and it starts to differentiate. The first element that differentiates out is our dear friend, false ego. So he's calling that the faculty of perverted cognition. The reflection of the seed of the procreative desire of the Supreme Lord. So there's four topics in this, what's left to cover. And the first one is Shambhu. So we just heard a whole, in the verse itself, a whole series of what Shambhu is. First of all, he's a svangsa, he's an expansion of the Lord. He's likened to a shadow of Mahavishnu. This is now from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila 20, 273. The term is svanga vishesha bhasa rupe. Abhasa means shadow. Vishesha abhasa rupe. He's a shadow. There's Mahavishnu and there's the shadow of Mahavishnu. He's likened to the shadow of Mahavishnu. Here in this verse, he's described as a divine halo. He's also described as dim twilight reflection of the supreme eternal effulgence. So what's that? It's like dawn or dusk. So it's night and it's dark. And the sun is starting to rise, and you don't yet see the sun, but you see the dawn. What's that? Arun. Dawn. It's not the sunlight. You can't see the sun directly, you can see the light of the sun. Like that. Shambhu is like that. Dim twilight reflection of the supreme eternal effulgence. So he's not Mahavishnu, but he's the dim twilight reflection of him. There's a couple more things that we'll say about Lord Shambhu. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila chapter 6, verse 79, here's a statement by Krishna Das Kaviraj. In the Vayu Purana, or maybe this is a purport. In the Vayu Purana, there is a description of Sadashiva in the Vaikuntha planets. So the Vaikuntha planets is that blue region up there, in the middle of our chart on the left. Sadashiva resides there. That Sadashiva is a direct expansion of Lord Krishna's form. For pastimes. It is said that Sadashiva, or Lord Shambhu, is an expansion from the Sadashiva of the Vaikuntha planets. And that his consort, Maya Devi, is an expansion of Rama Devi. or Lakshmi. Okay? As above, so below, it is said. You've heard that phrase. As above, so below. This is one of those. So that's one of our topics, Lord Shambhu, because he's an important personality. We'll hear some more about him as we go along. Specifically, in the Govindam prayers themselves, in text 45, there's a detailed description of milk transformed into dahi by a souring agent. During this time around, we're not going to be discussing the Govinda prayers, I'll just mention that souring agent or adulterating potency that makes Shambhu different than Mahavishnu. There's Mahavishnu reclining on an Anantashesh and he's glancing. Shambhu is the glance or the halo. Like, you know, if you have a flashlight in the darkness, that light that goes out from the flashlight in the darkness, it's not the flashlight, it's the light from the flashlight. Like that, that's Shambhu. That's the glance. And when he, Shambhu, contacts Pradhan, he becomes adulterated. And there's different parts of that adulteration. Just one moment. Three things. This is Bhaktisiddhanta's language, so pardon me. But the stupefying effect of the deluding energy, a small amount of that is affecting him. Doesn't affect Mahavishnu, because as we heard twice already, he doesn't have anything to do with his material energy. Shambhu does, he directly contacts the material energy, and so a small portion of the stupefying quality of the deluding energy affects him. The second, in relation to the jivas are marginal, in Bhaktisiddhanta's language, non-plenitude. Vishnu is full, the jivas are tiny. So, a small portion of that non-plenitude quality of jiva affects Lord Shiva. And the third is a slight degree of the cognitive and ananda principle of the internal potency. That is to say, Ramadevi, when she has her expansion counterpart, Chayadevi, some of her ananda and some of her chit potency is there in Durga, but not in full. So now, something that may be helpful, I hope it'll be helpful, there's some analogies that are used where Mahavishnu and within him is Ramadevi, there's the glance, that's Shambhu, and the receiver of the glance is Maya. It's compared sometimes to Mahavishnu is like a powerhouse. Ramadevi is the electricity generated by the powerhouse. Shambhu is the conducting wire, and Maya is the electrical device that receives the electricity. Good example, isn't it? Here's another one. There's a potter, and the potter uses clay to make pottery. So the clay, that's the ingredients, that's pradhan maya. And then there's the potter's wheel. And that's another feature of the material energy, upadan maya. We're going to hear, I don't think I'm going to do it today, because I think everybody's fatigued. You got to be sharp. But if we try to do it tonight for a Friday night audience, they'll spin out. So I'm not sure what to do. Can you stay strapped on for a little bit? We'll go through these different... Okay, so here's an example given in Bhagavad Gita. The smelling power of a person is Shambhu. The person who's smelling the flower is Mahavishnu, and the flower's fragrance is Durga. It gives an idea of a conveying of something between Mahavishnu and Durga. So Durga receives the Lord's glance. Here we go. It's compared to a woman who conceives a child. That's Durga. She's receiving the seeds, the living entities, from the glance of Mahavishnu, from Shambhu. He's impregnating her through the living entities by carrying the glance of Mahavishnu. And she acts like a mother's womb that does two things. One, the womb supplies ingredients. But not only the womb supplies ingredients, the womb provides an accommodating chamber for the child to grow. Very easy to understand. As the womb of a mother does these two things, so pradhan, or the material energy, does these two things. Here we go. It's a little technical. So, pradhan has another term, pradhan maya, or upadhan maya. You'll find it, it's this reference you see from the fifth chapter of Adi Lila, is called the material causal principle. There's a material cause, and there's the efficient cause. Here's a quote from that same section, Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila 5. Time, four things. Activity, we already heard the first two, Kala Shakti and Kriya Shakti. Providence, that's Daivam. And nature, Prakriti, are four parts of the causal aspect, Maya, of the external energy. This is Krishnadas Kaviraj speaking in describing the process of creation. There's two other references you may want to note that describe this also. Now this causal principle, that's Pradhan Maya, or that which supplies the ingredients, that part of the mother's womb that supplies the ingredients for the living entity to grow. It has these three parts, Jnana Bala Kriya. Same as this verse from Shvetashvatara Upanishad. Parashya Shaktir Vivadaiva Shruyate Swabhavaki Jnana Bala Kriyacha. Those that have heard Prabhupada speak, like heard his recorded lectures, you're very familiar with this verse. He speaks about it all the time. Refers to it all the time. So that's the causal portion, or the material causal principle, or that which supplies the ingredients, that part of material nature. So like the living entities in time contact material nature, and the elements start to separate, starting with false ego, and everything else comes from that. False ego mixing with the modes of nature, mode of goodness, the mind is produced, the mode of passion, intelligence produced, the mode of ignorance, the five gross elements are produced, and the five knowledge acquiring senses, and the five working senses, and the five objects of the senses. The mode of ignorance is very active. Very, 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 very productive. But you have to have all three modes to get creation. Not only one, all three. So this is the causal portion of the supplying the ingredients aspect. There's another. That's the chamber. Accommodating chamber. And that's called Nimitta Maya, or also sometimes called Adhara Shakti. Now those of you that attended the earlier class, you'll remember that word Adhara Shakti. Because when describing Balaram, Bhaktisiddhanta said, Balaram supplies everything in the material world, you know, the bed of Krishna, the shoes of Krishna, the umbrella of Krishna, then all his paraphernalia. And another aspect of Balaram is this one, the accommodating one, Adhara Shakti. Said this is called the efficient cause. So there's the material cause and the efficient cause. I get confused all the time with these two. But I understand in terms of ingredients and chamber. That's easy for me. The material cause, inefficient cause. Sometimes also called the immediate cause. That's like the place where the child is born. The womb of the mother. Ingredients are coming, but you need the place. So the immediate cause. Sometimes called Adhara Shakti. So now we have these two aspects of Maya, or the two aspects of the material nature. And now, yeah, here. This is a picture of Baladeva Vidyabhusan. We're almost done. Baladeva Vidyabhusan, what is he known for? Especially known for? Govinda Bhasya. Govinda Bhasya. Our topic is about Govinda. What is Govinda Bhasya? It's a commentary by Baladev describing Vedanta Sutra. And he did it by taking dictation from Govindaji in Jaipur, and he just wrote it down. And he's explaining the very same subject matter, part of it, because part of Vedanta Sutra is describing creation. So he describes creation in his Govinda Bhasya and says the following. Very interesting. The ultimate cause is Govinda. Just as the external energy consists of two parts, the efficient cause, Nimitta, and the material cause, Upadan, Maya being the efficient cause and Pradhan being the material cause, so also Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, assumes two forms to create the material world with the efficient and material causes. Now what is he saying? As Maya has these two aspects, Vishnu has two aspects. He's called Karna Dakshai Vishnu when the glance of Vishnu is making the arrangements for the accommodating chamber. And he's called Advaita Acharya when that portion of the glance of Mahavishnu brings about the ingredients. So one is called the efficient, the other is called the immediate cause. The efficient cause is Advaita Acharya. So therefore we know him as Mahavishnu. Isn't it? Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Advaita. He's Vishnu Tattva. He's Mahavishnu. But he's specifically that aspect of Mahavishnu who, by his glance, he excites the material energy and the elements unfold. He's that aspect of Mahavishnu, known as Advaita Acharya. And the other is known as Karna Dakshai Vishnu. Because by that portion of his glance, or aspect of his glance, the accommodating chamber, or Upadan Maya, no, Nimitta Maya is created. We're done. So far. We're just getting underway in the process of creation. So let's repeat. And when we begin our class this evening, I'll also repeat. What have we heard today? This is a summary. Govinda, existing in the spiritual world, has nothing to do with his material energy. He has simply engaging with his spiritual energy. The next verse says, although he has nothing to do with his material energy, remotely, when there is a desire for creation, and there's no obligation, it's just compassion. He's not doing a duty, he's just is compassionate by his nature. He feels compassion for the living entities that are dormant during the cosmic annihilation within his body. That's the samasti. It's all the living entities that are in the material world in this one quarter portion. And they're not experiencing the happiness that's rightfully, inherently theirs. So he wishes that then for them to have that happiness. He also wishes that the reflection of Rama Devi has some service. Compassion and compassion. He has that desire. Rama Devi detects that desire. She knows her Lord's and Master's desire. So she makes the arrangement to fulfill this desire. And she makes the arrangement by taking the living entities and her time energy and entrusting that to the glance of Mahavishnu, known as Shambhu. Shambhu carries that glance, or is that glance, and carries the living entities into time energy and contacts this pradhan. Once the pradhan is contacted and energized by spirit and time energy, it starts to differentiate, and now it's called Mahatattva. The elements start to differentiate, beginning with false ego. The material energy has these two aspects, as the womb of a mother has two aspects, providing a place for the living entity to grow, the accommodating chamber, Adhara Shakti, that's one aspect, Nimitta aspect, and Upadan, the ingredients. Mother's womb supplies ingredients, and the material energy also supplies the ingredients. So those living entities can have bodies with which they can perform devotional service. Now, unfortunately, many of them use those material bodies for something other than devotional service because they have these desires. So the process of devotional service, as we find in Bhagavad Gita, from the very beginning of creation, the Lord sent forth generations of men and demigods, and with them, this act of sacrifice, and bless them. By this act of sacrifice, you can achieve perfection. So we have this free will choice, fulfilling material desires, or using the form that we receive by the arrangements of the mother, material nature, to use in service to Krishna. That's how far we got with this process of creation, and it's going to continue for another 9 or 10 verses or so. Any comments or questions? Yes.
The creation here talks about that the living entities are already in the body of Mahavishnu.
Yes.
But the very first time when the living entities come to the from the spiritual realm to the material, that's not covered this time.
That's right. Thank you. It's not discussed at all. The origin of the jiva is not discussed at all. Or the fall of the jiva is not discussed at all. Both. And I prefer to not get on a line of discussion on that topic, please. If that was your question, please don't ask it. Go ahead.
So Maharaj, you said that in the spiritual realm, the Sadashiva is nothing but the Swamsha of Krishna.
Yes.
So in the material realm, the Shambhu, it's a reflection of the divine quality from Mahavishnu.
Yeah.
So how is the, from Sadashiva and Shambhu, what is the...
Sadashiva to Mahavishnu, who is also a Kala, and Shambhu makes his appearance in the form of the glance of Mahavishnu. So he has his existence, and he is an expansion of, as it said, from the spiritual world, Sadashiva. But he has a function. and that function is contacting Maya. Now this, we're within, now we're within, we're on, excuse me, we're still within the causal ocean, correct? And when milk, like milk comes in contact with a souring agent, milk becomes curd, and curd is nothing other than a milk product. Similarly, Shambhu, who's the glands, within this, before there's contact with matter, is apparently of the same nature, in fact it says, Swamsa of Mahavishnu. By contact with matter, he becomes transformed. By the adulterating principle, and the three in number. Let us discuss this when we go to next session, and we'll cover in text 45 in detail. How's that? Okay. Postponed description on this topic. Yes. In fact, it's 44, 45, and 46, all three of them discuss Lord Shiva in much more detail than we're going to have time for right now. Yes?
So, Maharaj, Chaya Devi is the expansion of Ramadevi.
Yes.
And Durga Devi is the expansion of
Yogamaya.
Yogamaya. So, if Chaya Devi and Durga,
yes,
Durga are the different.
No. Yes. They're the same. No, they're not different. Yes, they're the same. It's. But please understand, nomenclature has to do with application. You with me? Like, you know, your friends at work may call you something. Your boss may call you something else. Your wife may call you something else. Your children may call you something else. You're one person, depending upon the situation and the relationship, there may be a nomenclature difference. Similarly, Chaya Devi, Maya, Durga Devi, and etc., 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 has a lot to do with the relationship and the particular circumstances. But it's the same personality. Different aspects of the same personality, therefore nomenclature is different, but the same personality. Does that help? Good. Keep going. Go ahead. Yeah.
So, the Ganga which comes on the earth, that is coming from Sadashiva or that is coming from Shambhu?
Who?
The river Ganges.
The river Ganges. The river Ganges. Well, you know where the river Ganges comes from. When Vamanadeva pokes his foot, second step, through the coverings of the universe, right? What's on the other side of the coverings of the universe? The causal ocean. That's where the river Ganges comes from. And then that river Ganges descends into the universe.
So it holds on the Shiva's head.
Yeah. Well, he's a pretty capable person. We couldn't do that. But.
Was it Shambhu or was it Sadashiva?
Okay. Lord Shiva. But qualified. By that I mean Shiva Tattva is, we've already entered into it a little bit, and I'd like to postpone it until we get to text 44, 45, and 46, because the topic is very complex. Lord Shiva has multiple residences. One in Vaikuntha. When you read in Brihat Bhagavatamrita, just outside the coverings of the universe, Mount Kailash, and at the lower regions of the universe. He's got lots of different residences. And he has different aspects. And he's a very complex person. Or tattva. Shiva tattva is very complex. So now back to your question. It's Lord Shiva. Don't ask anything more on that topic. We'll do it another time when we get to those verses about Shambhu. Okay? Or Lord Shiva. Online. Go ahead.
Yes, this question is from Arvind Prabhu. He says, Prabhupada in his lectures mentions that if we were to be aware of reality, we would loudly protest at our current deplorable condition. My concern is through your kind sharing of this deep subject matter that we are being made aware of reality, but still, I'm not resentful of the current situation.
I'm not?
Resentful.
Resentful?
Yes.
I am not resentful of the present circumstance?
Of the present material situation that I'm in.
Okay.
So, I guess this question is, you know, what should you do, or...
Well, Krishna can take care of that. He can just, like, break you or something, cause enormous pain and suffering, and then you can be resentful. But there's a better position, and that's knowledge. By hearing, one can be activated by knowledge to do the right thing because it's the right thing. Otherwise, there may be pain and misery and suffering, and then you try to do the right thing because I don't like pain and misery and suffering. You know, act by knowledge or act by suffering. That's another option. It's not preferred. It's much more advisable, act of knowledge. Okay? All the way in the back. Microphone all the way in the back.
Thank you, Maharaj. Maharaj, today we talked about creation, right? So what is the Brahma's role here? Brahma also is a creator. Now
he's going to come later. This is Sarga, and later comes Visarga. Sarga means the creation of Vishnu. And after Vishnu does what he does, Brahma comes on the scene and does the rest. So stay tuned. We'll get there. This is Sarga first. There are ten topics in the Bhagavatam. We're now discussing one of them. Sarga, the creation of Lord Vishnu. Part of the creation of Lord Vishnu is to bring into life form Lord Brahma. And then Brahma does what Brahma does. That's Visarga.
So the material world is not yet created?
Oh no, we're just getting elements right now. Stay tuned. Yeah. Yes, over here. Oh, go ahead.
Hi, Krishna. So, if we are in the body of Mahavishnu, then are we not getting purified? Why do we again fall back into different species?
Your question is, during the time of cosmic annihilation, when the living entities are within the body of Mahavishnu, why are they not purified by being in the body of Mahavishnu? Why do they have to come again into the creation? That's your question?
Yes.
Well, it's the very same reason why we're in the material world to begin with, which is we've got an attitude problem. So one can be in contact with a great personality but have an attitude problem and not get purified. Can just like get aggravated further in our attitude. So, their consciousness is covered. So to get uncovered, there has to be a free will choice. Not just get in touch with the body of Mahavishnu. There's a free will thing that's got to happen. And they're not even in the free will space because they're in Susupti. So they have to have a body to do the free will thing properly. Yes.
Maharaj, for the verse 1.3.1, the 16 material, the 16 elements, I thought the way I understand it is that the 5 material elements are made.
No, it's 16 energies, not 16 elements. That's my understanding. For the purpose of creation, there's energies or shaktis, which is different than the 24 elements or the 8, whichever model you know. Krishna gives us. So it's not even apples and oranges, it's bananas and potatoes. Okay?
So I asked about the And you're speaking about the Durga Devi or the material energy, the accommodating chamber and the provision of the material.
Yes,
situation.
Yes.
So, I don't understand that. So, and I know Balram is Adhar Shakti, but how do we, like, what is the connection?
I've not heard a description, but just intuitively, those energies are expansions of his energies.
Provided by Lord.
Yes. Because, as stated, I could go back and read exactly what Bhaktisiddhanta says, but that Adhara Shakti is an expansion of Balaram for the purpose of accommodating the Lord's desire, Mahavishnu's desire for creation. He expands his energies to allow for that. So it's an aspect of his energy.
So Durga Devi is getting an energy from Lord Brahma.
I don't know. How, you know, again, the technology isn't described.
And also the Ichha Shakti of the Lord, which
yes.
is then Ramadevi is serving to fulfill that.
Yes.
So you explained as the Lord desires of the living entities receive transcendental happiness.
Yes.
But the living entity's desire is to enjoy. So is the Lord first, like, permitting that? Is
yes.
that an aspect of the Ichha Shakti?
Yes. Yes.
To permit the fulfillment?
He doesn't interfere with their free will, but he does have his desire. Just like right now. I mean, aside from what happens with the living entities are within the body of Mahavishnu before creation. Right now, creation is happening, and we have our desires, and he has his desires. He wants us to enjoy unlimited happiness. And we've got another idea. And he doesn't interfere. But he gives us opportunity. Why? He's just merciful. Well, why be merciful upon us? Because you've got another idea and we're rebellious. That's how merciful he is. He's still inviting us and making arrangements for it. But he doesn't interfere with our free will. It's something we have to decide. Yes. I want unlimited happiness. And not in a bonehead way. I want it in the way that he wants it.
So his compassion is the correction also.
Yes.
Which we did.
Exactly.
Thank you.
That's why we're here. Compassion. Descending mercy. And otherwise we'd be often doing the other things all the other people are doing on Thanksgiving holiday. Yes.
So between the Vaikuntha and Goloka there is Ayodhya.
Yes, there is.
So is Lord Rama and Sita eternally there?
Yes. But he expands himself to appear in different Ayodhyas in different universes.
So what is the origin of like Sita Devi there? I mean, talk about multiple energies.
What's the...
Sita Devi? Like,
what, say the whole sentence.
So how, what is her origin? Like, where does she...
She's eternal. There's no origin.
Who's the ontological, like, where does she expand?
She's expansion of... everything that's below Goloka is an expansion from Goloka. Now there may be sequences that I'm not familiar with and somebody that's a Ram Bhakta may know. But I'm not a Ram Bhakta. I only know what our Acharyas have given us, and as Ram and Lakshman and Bharat and Shatrughna are expansions of the Chaturvyuha of Goloka, so Sita is an expansion of their consort in the spiritual realm, in Goloka. And ultimately from Radha and Krishna, because Vasudeva, Sankarsana, and Pradyumna and Narayana are expansions of Krishna and Balaram, and their expansions in turn.
So on the same lines, like what about Rukmini Devi? Rukmini Devi?
Yeah.
Where does she come from, or who's expansion?
She's the expansion of Radha. Excuse me. She's the expansion of Chandravali. And Satyabhama is the expansion of Radha. Yeah, wow. Well, she's... Rukmini is the right wing. And Satyabhama is the left wing. When Krishna says to Rukmini, I don't think I'm good enough to be your husband. You know, that whole speech he gives. Hearing, she just falls to the floor like a cut banana tree. And Krishna's appreciating how much love Rukmini has for me. But then there's the left wing. So it's different natures, and Krishna likes all of them, not only the right wing, but the left wing. Out of love, not out of, you know, being a smart aleck or hard to get or, you know, troublemaker or, you know, unsubmissive or something. Out of love. Yes.
Maharaj, while explaining, you were telling that living entities in the body of Mahavishnu and being Mahavishnu compassionate on living entities. So those living entities not feeling that ananda.
Those living entities not experiencing ananda.
So that's why Mahavishnu has a compassion in those living entities to a material nature.
Yeah. He makes an arrangement so that they can have an opportunity to come to that position of ultimate happiness. They could also misuse it. Unfortunately, most misuse it. But he wants to give them the opportunity because it's a free will thing. He doesn't force it upon them. It's a free will thing.
Thank you.
Okay.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, you have mentioned about Narasimhati Radharani and then Chandravali, both are sisters.
Rupa Goswami said. Yes?
But we have not heard much about Chandravali. Do you have any information on Chandravali?
Our Acharyas don't speak much about Chandravali. Because there's these, they don't speak much because there's these two groups, right wing and left wing. Here's one from Bhakti Ratnakar. Raghunath Das Goswami resided at Radhakund. He resided at Govardhan Hill, but primarily at Radhakund. His bhajan kutir is there at the Govinda, the Gopinath temple. You've seen?
Yeah.
His Samadhi is nearby. So anyway, he's known that he ate very little, yes? Very austere. So every other day he would take a palmful of buttermilk, chash. Every other day. So some of his associates, they wanted to give him a little more than a palmful. So they made a leaf cup. And it was a big leaf cup. And they gave him chash in a big leaf cup. And he started drinking. And he was remarking, where did you find these big leaves? I've never seen big leaves like this around here in Radhakund. And Bhakti Ratnakar says that as he was drinking, they said, oh, at the place where Chandravali resides, we found these big leaves and we stitched them together and made a leaf cup. And immediately threw it to the side. Because he's a Radha Bhakta, not Chandravali. So we don't hear so much about Chandravali. Other than creating situations for Radha's sulking mood. There's one nice pastime that's described in relation to Man Mandir at Barsana, where both Subal and Vishakha had made an arrangement, combined plan, for Radha to meet Krishna. So Subal, much younger, friend of Krishna, and Vishakha, friend of Radha, they made a plan for meeting of Radha and Krishna. So there was an appointed place and appointed time. While Krishna was coming at the appointed time, Padma an associate of Chandravali, saw Krishna on a path, and she approached him in great distress, saying, Chandravali, is such great sadness and feelings of pain or separation. Please speak some words to her. Please pacify her. So there was time. Krishna went and spent a little time, but that little time became a lot of time. And one parent, by where Krishna and Chandravali were seated having a conversation, heard everything and flew to where Radha was and told Radha everything. So Radha went to Man Mandir and started her Man Leela. And Krishna came late, and Radha wouldn't have anything to do with Krishna. She would look the other way, and everything he tried was a failure. He couldn't break Radha's angry mood, so he placed his crown at the feet of Radha, begging her to forgive him, and her angry mood broke. So things like that, Chandravali is sometimes mentioned, but she's like, you know, just to enhance the Radha and Krishna loving relations. That's how our Vaishnava acharyas speak of Chandravali.
But Rukmini is the expansion of Chandravali. That's what you mentioned, right, Maharaj?
Yes. This is from our acharyas. What do I know? I'm just this little guy. But I'm repeating what our acharyas have explained.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Okay, we're done. Thank you all very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Hare Krishna. So we'll resume at 7:30 this evening. And after aarti, you can honor the prasadam downstairs. Hare Krishna.
I saw you several years ago. They've moved to the vicinity of Portland. So
I'm distracted by this recording device. Needs to go. Can you give it?